The order. It is my intent today to have Mr. Britton walk us through Senate Bill 5600 and looking at not only the budget portions of it, but looking at performance measures. And if time permits, because we have to be back on the floor at 3 o'clock p.m., if time permits, we will also work on Senate Bill 1088, do a work session on that as well, relating to payment for prescription drugs. So, Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Why don't you walk us through this?
All right.
And hopefully...
Madam Chair, I'm going to hand out the staff memo for this part of the presentation as well as the spreadsheet. You already have that in front of you, so I'll do that.
Just throw it out there and see what happens, right? Kids after candy.
All right. Madam Chair, as you indicated, what we're attempting to do here is to walk you through the health services cluster of Senate Bill 5600. And this memo, you have not seen this memo before, nor have you seen the spreadsheet in its completed form. We did, however, review it with several co-chairs this morning. You can see that we're going to be making some recommended changes to the governor's budget. These include the reshoot issues that the department submitted to the Legislative Fiscal Office several weeks ago. So those will be, you'll see those in a second on the spreadsheet. You'll also see some technical changes made to this budget for reduction in the PERS rate and the hourly rate for the Department of Justice attorneys, the Attorney General. You'll see Senate budget actions that reduce general fund services and supply expenditures by 2% and delay cost of living increases by 6 months. And you'll see some other adjustments that I'm recommending as your LFO analyst. Then if you flip over, you'll see that at the top of the page, the Department of Human Services budget is all part of one bill, that being Senate Bill 5600. So conceptual amendments to Senate Bill 5600 will be presented after preliminary work sessions are done on all the program clusters. We expect to do that tomorrow after we complete the seniors and people with disabilities cluster, but that's a tall order. We've got a lot to cover between now and then. The next section is performance measure review. I'll hand out the department's performance measurements, and we have a handful of changes to consider for the performance measurements. We have one budget note that I'll read after we complete the spreadsheet. And then at the bottom of the page, you see some subcommittee action. We're recommending that the subcommittee approve a preliminary budget that we'll walk you through in just a moment. And also, we're recommending that the subcommittee voice its approval of two amendments related to the Department of Human Services and the Oregon State Hospital Project. And those are within two other bills that the legislature will be considering. So we'll get back to those in a moment, but to start with, I would like you to take a look at the spreadsheet. It's the 8.5 by 14 legal size paper, and we'll walk you through that. It's really divided into two sections, the first being the agency reshoot request issues, and those are on lines 2 through 36, and they're totaled on line 37. So for the reshoot portion of the health services. The department submitted a reshoot that reduced general fund by $25.9 million. That's on line 37 within the health services budget cluster. Then the second section of the spreadsheet from line 39 on down to the end of the spreadsheet are adjustments that the Senate is suggesting the Senate would like to make to this particular budget cluster, health services. So with that, I'd like to go back up to line 1 on the spreadsheet, and I'll try and move along fairly quickly because we have a fair way to go here. Line 1 is the 2005-07 biennial governor's recommended budget as it was submitted to the legislature on December 1st of last year. And then we get to the agency reshoot request issues. The governor's recommended budget, you'll see total funds over on the far right, $4.8 billion total funds, 2,378 positions, 2,222.78 FTE. First reshoot item on line 2 is a tobacco tax revenue reduction. You'll see in the tobacco tax column a reduction of $10.2 million expenditure limitation and backfilling it with a like amount of general fund in the first column. This is based on the May forecast of the tobacco tax revenue that would go into the Oregon Health Plan.
Mr. Britton, how far are we down, are we down from revenues that went to the tobacco tax people? This is different from TORA.
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. The tobacco tax for TORA and the tobacco prevention and education programs, there'll be some adjustments later on down, and we'll talk about those.
Right.
But they are included in the governor's recommended budget, the $354.9 million of tobacco tax money.
Okay.
All of that is in that particular column.
Great.
But you'll see down below when we get to some LFO recommended changes to implement the budget, we'll talk about the TPEB and the TORA accounts. Line 3 is a net repricing of package 090 reductions. As you know, there are a variety of reductions in the governor's budget. The elimination, for example, of adult dental, a variety of them, I would say upwards of a dozen or more. And the net repricing of all of those reductions based on caseload changes and some corrections is about a $9 million general fund increase. The largest portion of that has to do with general assistance, and although that is a senior and people with disabilities program, what we have come to understand is that they cannot be cut out of the Oregon Health Plan. There was a reduction in the governor's budget related to general assistance of about $6 or $7 million, as I recall, and so that will not happen because of the practice of presumptive eligibility. When a person who might be eligible for general assistance on the senior side requests assistance, they are presumed eligible if they're making a claim to be disabled. So again, the lion's share of that add of $9 million has to do with general assistance persons going into the Oregon Health Plan.
Mr. Britton. Did you see this from Ms. Love?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I have, but
okay, well, I'll ask we'll you get, to respond to it later.
We'll get to the general assistance program tomorrow under the senior and people with disabilities budget cluster. But the Oregon Health Plan part of it is in line 3 here.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Line 4 is a repricing of policy option package number 110, which is to implement the Medicare Modernization Act. There's an add here on line 4 of about $4 million. There is a subsequent reduction that you'll see down on line 26, which offsets most of that increase. Line 26 is to adjust policy option package 111, and that reduces this by $3.8 million. So the net increase here for the Medicare Modernization Act in the reshoot, according to caseload changes and so on, is about $200,000 net. Line 5 has to do with the addition of a physician care organization. This is the net cost of about $227,000. In House Bill 3624, last time, the legislature added the option of establishing a physician care organization, and this is the cost of doing that. Line 6 is a net increase in non-Oregon health plan costs. This is a particular budget area that has included in the past and will include into the future costs for premiums for Medicare, and it's paid for with Medicaid, both state and federal funds. The match rate is somewhat hidden here because there is I believe, a match rate change going on in this particular adjustment as well. So it is not simply a premium increase, which is partly why the costs are being driven up, but there's also a match rate improvement in this particular line.
Mr. Durbin, if Senator Bates or Senator Montes Anderson, if you have any questions as we go along, I think that you could make sure you ask them.
Okay. And we all understand what this does. If we don't buy these premiums, these people could fall back into the Medicaid plan. It costs a lot more. The $17 million federal funds, how is that calculated?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, again, it was the cost at the normal Medicaid match rate, but again, in this adjustment, there is some match rate savings that was not included in the governor's budget. So it somewhat distorts the true match rate, which is the normal Medicaid match rate. But it is an increase. The driving force here is an increase in Medicare premiums.
Right.
Line 7 is a proposal on the part of the department to not close Oregon State Hospital Gero psychiatric wards. In the governor's budget, they did this proposal, and there was a reduction of $3 million general fund. You can see that it's being added back here in this proposal. You'll see some position changes as well over on the far right, and they appear to be going the wrong way, but in the governor's budget, these positions were added rather than deleted. So this adjustment all across the line keeps the OSH Gero psychiatric wards intact as they are today. Line 8 is a caseload change in the criminally committed Oregon State Hospital caseload, $2.8 million general fund, some federal match available there. Line 9 is other funds limitation needed for a Northwest Health Foundation grant, $179,000 other funds. Line 10 is an increase of $20 million. To give a new estimate for the non-limited federal funds. These are women's, infants, and children program non-limited expenditures. We are not limiting both the other funds at the top of the page or the non-limited federal funds, but this is a re-estimate of how much expenditure we expect to have in that particular program. Line 11 shows the elimination of a federal health services block grant in the president's budget and the backfilling of that grant with general fund, almost $1 million. You'll see down below that we are suggesting to remove that general fund backfill. It appears that the congressional house will restore those funds to some degree, maybe all of it. But in any case, We typically don't make changes to our budget based on the president's proposal because it's not the final federal budget. Line 12 is the complete add-back of the Family Planning Expansion Program reduction in the governor's budget, $1.6 million general fund, and significant matching funds, 9-to-1 match on the federal Medicaid waiver program. 13 is a proposal to add back.
Madam Chair,
Senator Martin.
It'd be nice to know what the other budget on the House side. Maybe that's not an appropriate question, but this is something that has not been dealt with on the House budget side.
Madam Chair and Senator Manas Anderson, that budget is public information at this point. We had hearings and work session on it, and this piece was added back ultimately in the House budget.
That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Line 13 is an add back of positions and FTE in the public health drinking water program. In the governor's budget, there was a relatively small general fund reduction and the elimination of 3 positions and 2 FTE. The department is saying they can handle the general funds reduction, but they would like the positions back and the FTE back, and they will fund those positions and FTE with some available services and supplies dollars. Supplies dollars. So we are adding the positions in FTE back. Line 14 is to transfer public health housing opportunities for people living with AIDS, so-called HOPWA grant, from the Department of Housing to the Department of Human Services. It would add about $2.1 million of federal funds, 4 positions, 2.5 FTE, and this was the same amount of funding and positions coming out of the Department of Housing and Community Services. Line 15 is a position correction for the Oregon State Hospital Investment Package that was approved by the November 2004 Emergency Board. 4 positions, 3.5 FTE, were left out of the governor's recommended budget, and they are being added back in this particular reshoot item. Line 16 is to continue funding for community-based placements for adolescents in need of specialized mental health treatment. And there's a note here that it's offset with Oregon State Hospital savings below from the closure of the adolescent ward at the Oregon State Hospital. So right below down on line, find it, line 28. There's that same amount of general fund savings. But this does close down, or will close, the adolescent ward at Oregon State Hospital has already been closed down. This takes the savings from that ward closure and directs them into the community for adolescent treatment and mental health.
John, is that money going strictly to the patients who left the program, or just generally to the counties?
Senator Bates, it's going to, I think, the providers that are providing those particular services, and it's ongoing. So the children that were released from the Oregon State Hospital went into those treatments. Now, ultimately, we hope that they'll move back to their homes and so on, but those slots would continue to be funded with these.
Idea being we're not going to have more adolescents coming here, so we're going to take care of the community-based programs, right?
I didn't follow that question.
The plan being that we're not going to have adolescents coming to the hospital here now. We're keeping with the community-based programs.
That's
correct. And we're permanently funding those programs.
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, that's right.
Thank you. I just want to get that in the record, Madam Chair.
Line 17 is increased staffing for the Office of Investigation and Training within the department to implement the governor's panel recommendation. This was a panel that was convened by the governor to look at abuse or cases of abuse and how they are investigated and handled at the Oregon State Hospital. And one of the recommendations was to provide some more staffing for the Office of Investigation and Training. And this proposal here, $232,000 general fund and some related federal match, four positions, 3.21 FTE, fulfills that recommendation.
So is this ongoing or just for this next interim?
Madam Chair, I'm not certain of that. I don't know the answer to that question. Line 18, although my understanding is that these are permanent positions.
Oh.
So I will look to the department for that understanding. And I don't see anybody that's saying yes or no, but I believe that those are permanent positions.
They are. Okay.
Line 18 is an increase in limited duration positions for approved grant activities, 10 positions, 9.5 FTE. As you know, in public health, we have a number of federally funded grants, and at the end of each biennium, these limited duration positions are abolished. To reestablish them requires this particular action. Line 19 is to adjust policy option package 108 for increased lottery revenue for gambling addiction. This is a dedicated amount of lottery funds, 1%, and this particular adjustment gets close to the recent May forecast of lottery funds going for gambling addiction treatment. There's a slight change down at the bottom of the spreadsheet that we'll look at in a second, but the intention here is to match the lottery funding expenditure limitation with the lottery funds that we expect from the Economic Development Fund. Line 20 is a savings of $24.3 million general fund based on capitation rate changes, fee-for-service rate changes, client-related adjustments in the Oregon Health Plan.
John, can we go back to the lines for a second?
Sure.
Can you give me some idea of the universe here for fee-for-service rate update? What's the what was the total cost of the fee-for-service group in the last biennium, and how much in actual dollars does their increase become?
And let me hand you out for that, but I think summarizes this pretty well. This is a summary that was prepared by the department at my request that shows the Oregon Health Plan plus fee-for-service, managed care, and total funds. You can see at the top of the page, the on the far left, the April 2004 base, which is pretty much analogous to the amount spent in 2003-2005. It's very close to that amount. Then you can see the change, which would include such things as utilization, inflation, estimated PricewaterhouseCoopers rates for both fee-for-service and managed care that were included in the governor's recommended budget. So in the April 2004 base, which is the starting point for the next biennial budget, about $2.4 billion, that was increased to about $2.9 billion in the governor's recommended budget for 2005-2007. And you can see the percentage changes. Then to the reshoot, you can see some of the savings, that the fee-for-service overall expenditures went down a little bit, and so did the managed care expected expenditures go down just a tad from the governor's recommended budget. The two primary drivers of those changes are in the second and third boxes down below, which show caseload and enrollment. And by non-enrollees and enrollees, Senator, they are talking about those enrolled in managed care or not enrolled in managed care, or in other words, fee-for-service patients. So you can see that there was partly this increase in the governor's recommended budget from base is partly due to enrollment changes, caseload changes, and then down further, the third box, the change in the PMPM, per member per month cost, also was a factor here. Again, these are averages, and each particular caseload within the Oregon Health Plan can change. Capitation rates can change. Enrollment changes and total caseload for each of those sub-caseloads change as well. So there's a lot going on, even though this is a pretty simple display here.
Madam Chair.
That's great.
This sheet raises more questions than it answers for me, but I appreciate the information. This is the kind of information I think we need to look at and vet over a period of 2 or 3 weeks, ask a lot of questions to health care plans and those who administer fee-for-service. We're not going to have an opportunity to do that, and I realize that. And splitting of ways and means has prevented us from looking at these. I'm certainly going to vote for this budget, you know that. But I'm going to do so with the caveat that when this goes up to the next level, that we have an opportunity this week to go over these kinds of things. And if we find that we need to make changes, we have an opportunity potentially to do that. We have another bite at the apple. I would like to work, and I'm sure Senator Westland would like to work on these figures with me. This is, you know, whatever his name is, you know. But these are interesting figures. I mean, my first look at it looks like fee-for-service had a greater increase on a percentage basis than managed care did. My policy, and I think others, has been that we want as many people in managed care in this plan as possible. There's more questions asked here than answered. So let me have an opportunity to read through this later. I don't want to hold this process today.
Well, don't worry.
We'll get through it.
We don't finalize it until tomorrow. And I do know that you read fast and you're thorough.
We will look
at it. Chair, Senator Bates, I also talked to Lynn Reed, who is the interim director of the health plan, and she is aware of your interest in this. I showed her this display, which she'd seen before, and she is available to talk with you further about it as well.
Mm-hmm. This is the heart of the plan. These are billions of dollars we're talking about here, and we spend a lot of time talking about programs that are important but don't reach this level, we just brush over this. We need to look at this carefully. I would move it forward today.
Okay.
But we'll look at it. Okay?
Senator,
thank you.
I want to understand a little bit clearer, and you let me know if these numbers can tell me this. Managed care is always supposed to save the system money. And when I look at the numbers, I can't really see if there really is a difference in the cost of the fee-for-service clients versus managed care services. Can you shed some light on that for me?
look at the third bar down.
Third bar down?
Per member per month costs.
Right here.
Fee-for-service versus managed care.
There we go.
This is after the reshoot, 365 versus 332 per member per month.
Right, but I think what I'm hearing the Senator from Gresham say, that when you look at the actual costs, look at the percentage of costs versus the actual cost, there is not much distinction between the two.
Madam Chair, a $30 difference per member per month is huge in these kinds of plans. That is a significant savings. Now, the other thing that makes this thing more complicated is you don't know your patient mix is in fee-for-service versus managed care. So it gets very, very complicated very quickly. And if you're looking at a fee-for-service population that is not managed care because it has special needs, that can make the figures not be as meaningful as you first look. And there's lots of questions here. And that's my point.
Follow up then on that very issue. So do we have any information versus our clients that are in fee-for-service versus those that are in managed care? Do we have any data describing that?
Yes, we do, and it gets more complicated. Some counties have almost everybody in managed care, and so there would be, in those cases, no selection, nothing that would push you one way or the other as far as what that population looks like. Other counties might have a situation where their managed care doesn't cover everybody. Those people outside of managed care may be more expensive patients than those inside. that's why it becomes very complicated. Making it worse is your capitation rates are based on about 20 different factors in each county: age, gender, past history, and all kinds of things. So these general rules, these general figures we've gotten today are very helpful, and I really appreciate them. I'm personally convinced after what we did with Senator Westland's committee last session, that we in fact are doing much better with managed care than we would be without it, and that's the way we should still continue to push. But it never hurts to go back and make sure that's what's really happening.
Senator Bates.
Excuse me, not Senator Westland.
This is Westland.
Trying to find out.
No.
Have you finished?
I'm Monica Anderson.
I'm trying to find out if you have finished.
No, this is very enlightening because those were the questions that I have. I feel that I've always believed in managed care, and I keep thinking that we need to get more and more people into managed care. And then when I start seeing numbers like this, I'm wondering how come we aren't getting them into managed care, and is there a reason why we have fee-for-service and aren't pushing harder to get those fee-for-service into managed care?
Well, that's a good exactly my point. Thank you.
No, all right.
But if I could help maybe answer Senator Mona Sanderson's question just a little bit, the managed care plans have been very diligent over the years in studying, monitoring utilization, and they've finally been up running long enough, those that have had consistent enough management, and it is very clear that in one of our major challenges, they are succeeding at reducing utilization, which is a cost to any plan, to the state, to the Oregon taxpayers. So I can get those for you if you'd like. That to me just makes it absolutely crystal clear as to the value and validity of the plans.
I can assure you that I know for now we have a deputy, veteran deputy administrator at DHS, where we went through whipping mental health programs into managed care in the 80s and 90s, and people still hate us today, but hopefully, Mr. Cass, we can... You're listening, and you can take a good look at. I was just giving you compliments as well of talking about us constructively. How people hated us when we, really directed the mental health programs in the 80s and 90s into managed care system, and how hard that was making people go forward. But nevertheless, we found out that it did work better in the end, and hopefully, we can look at the concerns that Senator Bates and Monica Sanderson Westland, which is all but your chair up here, saying something, and I can't go forward without their vote. And so I'm hoping that you realize the importance of helping them to look at this piece.
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I think one of our roles here as a legislative body is to look for ways that we can address cost containment in our health care system. And having worked with low-income people, I know that we have to sort of have a structure that will prevent people from misusing or getting duplicative services, and that's where the managed care system really works. And I am surprised at these figures. I had no idea that we had so many more non-enrollees rather than enrollees, and I don't know, we have not addressed that, I don't think, as a legislative body in how we can get more of our fee-for-service into managed care, and I think that's what we really should be focusing on.
I'm sure, Senator Monica Sanderson, that as we look across the state, there are particular places in the state where managed care does not work, simply because we don't have the critical mass of medical, practitioners there, and so therefore certain fee-for-services have been used in those communities. But I'm sure after this discussion that there will be a more meaningful application of how do we go from here in terms of looking at fee-for-service versus managed care. And the savings that we could realize as a result of that.
Thank you.
Mr. Britton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to continue with line 21, OHP caseload forecast. There is overall a reduced caseload, and on the reshoot saves about $13.8 million general fund. Line 22 is the a reduction to the general fund HIV and transplant program. This was a program that the 2003, I believe, might have been 2001, but I think it was 2003, legislature adopted as a
2001 special session.
As a replacement for the medically needy program. And the caseload is projected for this particular program to drop, saving about $3.9 million general fund. Now, in that regard, I want to report that we did have a meeting between House members and Senate members and Department of Human Services persons on the ADAP program, the AIDS Drugs program. That was the topic of some controversy with respect to the rebalance. And I'm not sure that a final decision has been reached with respect to that. There is no addition in terms of funding for that program in the budget that I'm going to present to you today, but it is still on the radar screen, and the House and the Senate will have to talk about that further. Line 23 shows, with respect to the Oregon Health Plan, revised Medicaid and Children's Health Insurance Program match rates, savings of about $5.3 million general fund. Line 24, increased third-party recovery revenue, saves an additional $650,000 general fund. Oregon Health Plan mental health. The kids' intensive services are projected to cost somewhat less, $462,000 of general fund savings. Line 26, adjust policy option package 111. We looked at this a moment ago. This, again, is the reshoot based on new caseloads for the costs back up in line. Four, with policy option package number 110, and most of that, as I said, is offset with this adjustment, $3.8 million general fund. Line 27 is a correction of some children's health insurance program costs. There was a duplication of a budget adjustment in package 030, which is an inflation adjustment of about $2.2 million to correct. Line 28, we talked about a moment ago. This is the savings from closing the Oregon State Hospital adolescent ward, $3.1 million general fund, which are being used to finance more community-based placements for adolescents, savings of 43 positions, 42 FTE. Line 29 is the new forecast of civilly committed Oregon State Hospital caseload, a reduction in general fund of about $1.2 million. Line 30 shows...
Madam Chair?
Senator Monison.
With line 29, does this mean... Why is there a reduction? I mean, do we have a sense as to why? And I guess I'm trying to get to the... Is this... There has been an issue regarding hospitalization and our civilly committed patients, and does this enter into that problem at all?
Well, Senator Mona Sanderson, I can tell you that up above we added money for the forensics caseload. That's expected
forensic,
to increase.
Yes.
This is the civil commitment. And the net is an addition, I think, of about one. Well, I'd have to add them, but $1.3 or $4 million, I think. I'd have to look for a second.
So we added.
We added for the forensics. I'm not finding it. Oh. It's on line 8, $2.8 million added for the forensics.
And I missed that. I'm sorry.
And this is a reduction in the civil commitment case, 1.2.
Interesting. Okay.
Line 30 is the Medicaid match rate change and improved match rate over what was included in the governor's budget for the Office of Medical or Mental Health and Addiction Services. Line 31 is a reduction in fuel funds expenditure limitation within the public health lab of $1.2 million. Line 32 is a mental health reduction, and you noticed back earlier there was a $3 million add to add back or to not close the Jarrow psychiatric wards. However, there is a reduction of $3 million in the mental health budget. Half of that, $1.5 million, is in adult outpatient services for non-Medicaid persons, and this would cut their services for about 1,750 persons. Now, you'll see in a moment that that particular cut is being added back down below. We'll get to that in a moment. The other half of this $3 million reduction is a cut to the Intermediate Care Payment Fund, which is used to pay hospitals primarily when they are housing persons who are expected to be civilly committed or perhaps even criminally committed, $1.5 million. What the department hopes to be able to do is to make sure that those persons, that we limit the number of people who are that critically ill that they need psychiatric care in a hospital, and instead address those issues with community-based services more extensively. And the department has had some success in doing that, as I understand it, particularly in Multnomah County.
So as the analyst here, have you observed the people that have gone out of the hospital with that kind of critical care and gone into housing, into community housing?
Madam Chair, I have not observed that.
So do we have data in terms of showing the, you know, that whole acute care community once the hospital has broken down and how what the status is outside of hospital environments?
I don't know the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. The department would have to respond to that. Do you want to?
Well, it's something that, Mr. Spinner, just seems as if for public policy purposes, and Dr. Bates, you know a lot about this since you see people, we should have some kind of data that tells us when you get to that acute care, how people doing outside of hospital, outside of medical institutions, and going into, you know, private homes and that level of care.
All right. This goes directly to the idea of whether we have good wraparound programs in our communities. This is what you're talking about, wraparound programs. Prevent them from getting into the hospital in the first place.
Right.
And if they do get there, you try to take care of them locally and get them back out quickly into a setting where they're safe again and avoid hospitalization at the state level. Again, this goes back to things that we've not had an opportunity to really investigate. Those figures should be available to us. We should be able to see the rates of hospitalization of the mentally ill, what the length of stay is locally, how long they have to wait there before they get moved somewhere else. What's the hospital beds availability in the state? Because sometimes we find ourselves moving people hundreds of miles to find an available bed for them, to Bend or to Medford or to Roseburg or to Salem or Portland, finding a mental health bed while they're waiting to go somewhere else.
Right.
And that's exactly what you're driving to. LFO has indicated you've seen some figures indicating that system's improving, at least in Multnomah County.
Mm-hmm.
The policy here is to put more pressure on the hospitals to make sure those community programs exist and work and function so you have less chance for hospitalization. On the other side, we have to fund those local programs, or that doesn't happen, you just have a jam up at your local hospital levels. I continue to be concerned that we have not had an opportunity to do this. I mean, these are lives we're talking about. People can get very sick. They can die. If we don't take care of these things properly, and once again, while people may think that the ways and means system is just a matter of money, it's a lot more than money. These are people we're talking about who can live and die by the decisions or mistakes we make here. And I am just saddened that we have not had that opportunity. Again, we will look at this very, very quickly in the next 24 hours, I expect, and hopefully we'll find that we have proper expenditures here. But I am still I'm holding back on this. I'm going to give you the yes vote, but I'm very concerned. Very concerned. Thank you.
Senator Westlin?
And
the twins?
Madam Chair, this might not be the appropriate line item to bring this up, but it's related when we start talking with, you know, about people with mental illness, a lot of whom are self-medicating through drugs and alcohol, and we're all sitting around here, you know, half patting ourselves on the back because of our meth package, and we're getting more drug courts, and that, you know, that's a wonderful thing. But if we don't have the capacity in our A&D residential alcohol and drug treatment centers, why do it? What have we done?
Nothing.
Nothing. And Madam Chair, yes. I want to follow up on that. I'm glad he's brought that up, because really the alcohol and drug treatment in the DHS budget, at least originally, needed $6.7 million more than what we have. And I can't tell from this what we're doing to our drug and alcohol treatment program. What have we done, Mr. Britton?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Monis Anderson, we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay. There is some additional funding for alcohol and drugs, but it's not in the reshoot portion of the budget.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting, I'd like to ask another question.
I've been talking.
What have we done with the OMAS? I forget that. Is that, will we be covering that also?
Oregon Mental Health, or Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. That is in here as well.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, let me take this time to say this. For everybody that's sitting in the audience and for those of us up here, I think all of us have been scratching our heads and everything, trying to figure out how we can best take care of the most vulnerable in our society. I don't need to tell you what happened to ballot measure 28 and ballot measure 30. Somewhere along the line, this should point to all of us that there's just not enough money in the system to take care of our most needy in this state. And somewhere along the line, all of us got to roll up our sleeves and talk to our friends and neighbors and talk about the importance of putting new money in the system to be able to take care of these issues. A lot of people laugh at Senator Nelson when he talks about that. But I think that is very important, because this is an area, people like me came here talking about drug and alcohol. I'm probably the only legislator that's been 20 years on Human Services Committee, so you know I've heard the cry for a long time. So somewhere along the line, with all of us working together, we got to start pointing fingers at each other, and all of us get to work and trying to get the people of the state to realize the importance of putting new money in the system in order for us to go forward in taking care of these kind of issues. And I know, Senator Westlin, you're saying, but I bet I could find some money here, I can find some money there. And I know that that's important, but wherever you find the money, don't forget you're taking it from one group to give to another group. In the end, there's just not enough money in the system. When physical health runs out of money, they go over and rob and steal money from behavioral health. When we run out of money for DD, we run over to mental health and get it, or we run to someplace else and get it. There's just not enough money in the system to take care of the needs of Oregon's most vulnerable, and that's something we have to in the future go forward together in trying to get new money in the system. I'm about to make you a senator, Mr.
Please don't do that.
You couldn't handle a pay cut, you know.
No. Line 33 is a correction of positions in FTE with respect to a ward closure at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. And you'll see in a moment that is being added back. That was a reduction in the governor's budget, and we'll get to that in a moment. But this corrects some positions and FTE issues in the governor's recommended budget. Line 34 is to remove some excess other funds expenditure limitation within the Oregon Health Plan, $8.9 million other funds. Line 35, because of a reprojection of provider taxes and match adjustment, OHP standard caseload will be reduced somewhat. Limitation reduction of limitation of about $26.9 million total funds. And then there are a variety of technical adjustments department-wide. They net to zero, but the health services portion of that of those technical adjustments are $822,709 general fund, some other funds and federal funds as well. And that is the reshoot request. As I said earlier, this was a reduction of about $25.9 million general fund that the department believes that this health services cluster can save. Now we get to the Senate and LFO adjustments. Lines 39 and 40 are the PERS rate reduction as well as the Attorney General rate reduction. Line 41 is an LFO adjustment to general fund. This was back up on line 11, I think. Make sure that. Line 11, which added this much general fund to replace a presidential budget cut. As I said earlier, we don't typically make adjustments associated with the president's budget because it's not a final federal budget. So this would reduce that or would reverse that general fund add in the reshoot. Line 42 is the add back for the Oregon Health Plan cost for a reduction within the seniors and people with disabilities area. This was the elimination of the relative adult foster care. You'll see the seniors adjustment tomorrow in a similar kind of spreadsheet, but this is the total add back for the Oregon Health Plan cost associated with those persons who are now receiving and would continue to receive relative adult foster care, $3.9 million general fund.
Does that, Madam Chair?
Senator Montesano.
Thank you. Does that bring it back up to what it was then? We had been in the governor's recommended budget. He had reduced it completely, and this brings it back to what?
Madam Chair and Senator Montes-Anderson, it brings it back to zero as far as the Oregon Health Plan piece of this. Now, you'll see the seniors piece tomorrow, and that's something a little different.
Okay.
But for the Oregon Health Plan piece, it adds it all back.
Thank you.
Line 43, no aggressive preferred drug list management of Oregon Health Plan fee for service prescription drugs. This was a reduction of 5.1 in the governor's recommended budget. There was about another $100,000 of savings associated with that action. However, the Senate does not believe that they want to do this, so this requires an add-back of $5.2 million general fund.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
A question for LFO. This is essentially a lack of prior authorization for fee-for-service prescription drugs. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, yes, as I understand it, yes.
Prioritization for medications has become the industry standard now. You know, it's done selectively for high-cost, heavily used medications. And I understand the politics going up this hill, and it's either a change of my position, but physicians are used to this now, and we're comfortable with it. I'm sorry we're not making this change, but I understand the House has agreed to this number. Is that correct?
Yes.
And let's let it go.
Special.
Another year.
I would prefer to not let it go.
I'll take that into consideration.
Okay. Well, this is actually the number that's left after MMA. It's actually a much larger number.
Right.
Yeah. I guess you got to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're here to do.
I just said I preferred not to let it go.
Yeah.
I
vote no on the budget.
Line 44 is an add back of Oregon Health Plan dental. This would add back emergency and then some. What the then some is not known to me. The House add back was $7 million here. The total add back is on the order of about 13, but here we're adding back $8.4 million for OHP dental services. Line 45 is to reduce the managed care organization capitation rates by lowering the DRG hospital component to 72% of the actuarially determined rate. That is where they are today within the capitation rate, 72%. The governor's budget increased that to about 90% of the actuarial rate. But this is a reduction down from the 90% down to the 72%. $32.3 million general fund reduction.
What's the standard across the nation?
Madam Chair, I don't know the standard across the nation. I'm sorry.
Good question.
Any insight?
That's a good question. I don't know what that is. Excellent question.
Lynn, do you have an idea?
Well, I don't think there is an answer because not all states have managed care.
They don't all have managed care, but certainly there is between those kind of services and the reimbursement
like
to the hospital.
And those that have fee for service, it would be interesting to see what their rates are against their matrix. It's very hard to judge. We should that'd be an interesting number to look at.
Well, you have states with much larger Medicare payments, and so they could afford to have lower Medicaid reimbursement rates.
That's true.
I mean,
going forward.
The next, line 46, is to remove some general fund associated with an unknown roll-up included in the Oregon State Hospital Investment Package approved by the November 2004 E-Board. At that point in time, the E-Board agreed to four changes. One of them was to create 25 adult foster home placements for the mental health system, create 50 new step-down placements within the mental health system, three positions needed to implement the placements, and an initial study on Oregon State Hospital, which was completed. The roll-up for the Phase 2 portion of the study on the hospital is included in the governor's budget at $350,000. The other components I mentioned totaled $1.7 million general fund. In the governor's budget, there was the inadvertent add, I suspect, of about $4.7 million rather than the $1.7 roll-up. And this change removes that additional general fund, about $3 million general fund savings here. Line 47, 48, 49, and 50 are all removing cuts that were made in the governor's recommended budget. The first to community mental health system funding of $834,000, an add-back of mental health crisis services funding, $500,000, an add-back of mental health services for seniors and people with disabilities, $1.7 million general fund. And finally, do not close one ward at Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, an add back of $1.1 million general fund. The next four lines get at a question, Madam Chair, that you asked earlier. And these are all associated with the tobacco prevention and education program. And let me represent that these four lines do the following. They are to maintain, the goal here is to maintain the current funding level of $6.9 million of TURA and TPEB within the 05-07 biennium. So that 6.9 is the amount that we're currently funding for 03-05, and that amount would be carried forward into 05-07. And it removes all general fund from the tobacco prevention and education programs and replaces it with tobacco tax. So the net add here, if you total those general fund lines, you'll get an add of $1.7 million general fund that is going into the Oregon Health Plan. And about it's a net wash for the tobacco tax within health services, but overall, the funding level for the tobacco prevention and education programs would be $6.9 million. Now, this still means that from the TURA account, there would be taken $7.5 million, and that would be moved into the Oregon Health Plan to backfill or to use for in lieu of general fund. And that's somewhat less than what was in the governor's budget, that particular transfer.
Senator Bates has a bill to fix that.
Moving right along, the plans always speak.
Just to be clear on this point, too, because this is something I still think the policy here is wrong, to put the money in Oregon Health Plan instead of in prevention of cigarettes. I mean, you save more in the long run doing that than even putting in for treatment. And I agree with you. The voters passed a ballot measure that set aside a certain percentage of tobacco revenue for prevention. I think that correct me if I'm wrong, that's why this number on the record is about $14 million right now if we were to fund this the way the taxpayers and the voters said to do this. So to make this program whole, we really would have to move $7 million out of the Oregon Health Plan back into this.
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, the small writing here is that the current forecast for TURA is $14.4 million, and it's in the description here. $7.5 million of that is under this budget proposal transferred to the Oregon Health Plan.
Thank you.
And the remaining $6.9 million goes into the tobacco prevention and education programs.
Thank you. Just for the record, for clarification. And it again will be a discussion.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Morrison-Sampson,
when we first started using our tobacco prevention education dollars in the schools in particular, we saw a dramatic change in the use in the non-use of cigarette products by our young people. And I'm glad to see we're keeping it the same as the 2003-2005 budget for this time, but I still feel we cannot get complacent when our cigarette or our tobacco use, it may be declining, because once we stop an education prevention education piece, that number keeps going up. So anyway, just to get on the record that we need to keep really focusing on tobacco prevention use.
Line 55 is a 2% services and supplies reduction, about $800,000 general fund. Line 56 is an additional 6-month COLA delay in the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services and Public Health, $1.4 million general fund.
What does that mean, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair and Senator Montes-Anderson, it means that the cost of living increase that was scheduled in the governor's budget for January of 2006 will be delayed another 6 months till July 1st of 2006.
Okay, thank you.
Additional alcohol and drug funding on line 57, including methamphetamine treatment, $1.6 million is added in this budget. Line 58 is an LFO reshoot adjustment to eliminate some excess other funds and federal funds limitation in the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Line 27 matches up the increase in lottery funds in the May 2005 forecast with the forecast, so that the limitation here for lottery funds is equal to what the forecast is for gambling addiction. Line 60 is to remove $49,000 general fund from the Women's, Infants, Children's Farmers Market. This was added in Senate Bill 289, and this removes this from the base budget, if you will.
What did we add total to 289? Is this all the money? It's what I'm...
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, this is all the money that was added in Senate Bill 289. The program is currently funded at about $160,000 general fund. They need about $45,000 general fund for match. So they're well above their match requirement to get their available federal funds. Senate Bill 289 increased the program by 40, or would increase the program by $49,000. And it was the co-chair's decision not to continue to add $49,000 every biennium. Line 61 is an add back for the Oregon Health Plan cost for the waiver cap reduction in the seniors and people with disabilities budget. Again, you'll see that tomorrow within the SPD budget, but this is the Oregon Health Plan component of it, $555,000 general fund. Line 62 is the add back to the governor's recommended cut of children's emergency medical services, $200,000 general fund. Line 63 is an add back to the governor's recommended budget cut of juvenile diabetes database, $100,000 general fund. Line 64 reverses package 096, which was the, as I understand it, the elimination of the criminal fines and assessment. It was to all go to general fund, and this reverses that and backfills. It was a backfill with general fund. Now it will be criminal fines and assessment money going into the public health emergency medical services program. So this is a net wash, but it does reduce general fund by $315,000, increases other funds by $315,000. And finally, this is the add back of the one half of that community or mental health reduction of $3 million. This restores the services to non-Medicaid community services for 1,750 people. $1.5 million general fund. So the overall adjustments, apart from the reshoot, is a reduction of about $12.3 million general fund. You can see the total preliminary budget on line 67, $4,661 million, 2,230 positions, 2,163.8 FTE.
Any questions?
I have a question. And I'm not sure, is the mental retardation and developmental disabilities, the people that work in that department, is that?
No.
That's not this part.
Madam Chair, okay. And Senator Mona Sanderson, that's in the seniors and people with disabilities budget, which you'll see tomorrow.
Okay.
Performance measures? So most of you guys, the three of you guys have worked on this before. Pardon? The three of you have worked on this before, the performance measure.
What I'd like to do now, Madam Chair, is to, if you look at the memo, assuming I can find mine. It's on the back of the memo. LFO is recommending that the subcommittee consider six changes. And this is identical to what was presented to the House committee. The first is performance measurement 16, which is the rate of unintended pregnancies per 1,000 women aged 15 through 44. And what I've written here is to consider changing the measure to the rate of intended pregnancies per 1,000 women aged 15 to 44. This was of concern to some of the House members, And in the end, I've written here, data and targets would also need to be changed. In the end, the department is doing some work on this particular measure, and I would believe that they are coming back to the audit committee during the interim to talk about this particular measure. If you have things to say about this measure, that would be useful, but not necessary at this particular point in time.
I'm confused as to what. Consider changing the measure to the rate of intended.
The current measure is the rate of unintended pregnancies per 1,000 women, and one of the thoughts on the part of the House was to measure the rate of intended pregnancies per 1,000.
I think that, Madam Chair, and I don't know the stats, but I think only one third out of all babies that are born are intended. I don't have an issue with this. Some people are very good about planning their pregnancies, but most people aren't. But they still love being pregnant once they get pregnant. But I'm. Do you know the reasoning as to?
I'm not entirely clear, but I think that the proposed change, I think, had to do with the fact that approximately 5% of abortions are in the numerator, and that was an issue for some members of the House. So right now where it stands is that the department is working on this particular measure, and it could be considered before the audit committee during the interim. So the House Budget Committee didn't exactly come down on this particular thing definitively one way or the other. We could retain the measure as it is, or we could go along with that recommendation to punt to the interim.
I'm confused. I would like clarification. Right now, the performance measure is to actually measure those pregnancies that weren't intended, correct? So they
the existing measure is the percentage of pregnancies that were unintended or were terminated.
Yes.
And they are proposing, they being the department, is proposing a change which would create a rate and would exclude approximately 5% abortions.
Mr. Cass, come up here.
Yeah.
To account for the fact that not all abortions represent pregnancies that were unintended. So.
To be and not to be.
Are these human pregnancies, Madam Chair? Because I have 100. I have progeny, in 127 different countries, and.
We're not talking about.
Careful, Ben.
Talking about the use and sale of certain semantic processes, to bring about this kind of activity. We're talking human.
Oh, okay. I just want to.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm Barry Cast, Deputy Director of the Department of Human Services. Actually, this measure includes data from the PRAMS survey. That's the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System. Our epidemiologists in the Office of Family Health survey on a statistically accurate basis every following the delivery of every baby in the state for a sample of mothers, and ask questions like, thinking back to just before you got pregnant, how did you feel about becoming pregnant? This is a complicated issue, as Senator Mona Sanderson, you pointed out, because there are pregnancies that are wanted. There are pregnancies that are unwanted. There are pregnancies that are wanted but occur at a different time than they were anticipated. So how do you get at something as complicated as whether a pregnancy is intended or not? From the PRAM survey alone, we know that in 2002, 60.8% of births were intended, according to methods that have been tested and are considered acceptable nationally by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The problem with the measure as it existed for some members of the House some members of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, as we had that discussion earlier in the year, was that we make an inference about the number of terminations and how many of those represented wanted versus unwanted pregnancies. And the science there, frankly, isn't as good. As I think you were pointing out, Mr. Britton, of all of the terminations of pregnancy, about 5% were considered to have been wanted, and that is not, we don't know really what that represents. So rather than try to get a different way of measuring unintended pregnancies, we thought we would attack this issue head on and use the PRAM survey to tell you whether we're making progress with the deliveries that we actually do know something about. And felt that was a good accommodation and took the confounding issue of abortion out of the measure. We won't get agreement about that 100% from the community because it's a very complicated issue and we need to do more work, as Mr. Britton pointed out.
Will you go across socioeconomic strata?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Will you be going across socioeconomic strata to determine this research, I mean, to get information on this research?
I think the survey includes accommodating social and cultural and other distributions in the population.
Right.
We have about 40,000 births, as I understand it, per year.
Because otherwise, for public policy, it would not serve as good of a vehicle as we think, since we are making public policy. So I'm hoping that that we will have diverse communities of people that are being researched along this line.
Madam Chair, indeed. Our goal within the department, as you have said it over the years, is to increase the ability of low-income families to get the services they need, take responsibility for their family development, and get access to the contraceptive services and other services which give them control over those decisions.
Right.
But, Madam Chair,
Munson,
our goal, though, I thought when we first developed this performance measure, was we did want to cut down the number of abortions that are occurring, correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, that is correct. And the data tells us that at least the data tells us that we've been successful in that. In fact, this budget includes a reduction in the abortion caseload that's funded in the OMAP budget because of the effectiveness of these services. So we're moving in the right direction.
But a follow-up?
Please.
But if you say 5% of the abortions will not be, if you change the word to intended, would not even be here, that means we're really not tracking the number of abortions that we're having. I need to understand this 5%.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, this is a key performance measure for the department, but the key performance measures don't prevent us from measuring all other kinds of data, and we will track those numbers and can report them to you as you desire.
Senator Wexler?
Would you entertain a motion?
I will.
Madam Chair, I move into the Health Services Division of Senate Bill 5600, Performance Measure 16, related to intended pregnancy.
Objections?
And my understanding from all of that, Senator, is that the department will continue to work on this particular one.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. The next one is Performance Measure Number 17, and 17 is simply a matter of perhaps changing the targets here. This is the percentage of low-income women who receive prenatal care in the first 4 months of pregnancy. The targets for 2006 and 2007 are actually lower than the actual data in 2002. So I'm suggesting that the targets be revised upward a little bit to 89% and 90%, which is a little bit higher than the targets that are now contemplated.
Senator Wesson.
Madam Chair, I move adopting the LFO recommendations for Performance Measure 17, adopting them into the Health Services Division of Senate Bill 5600.
Any objections?
Performance measurement number 18 is the percentage of engaged clients who complete alcohol and other drug abuse treatment and are not abusing alcohol or other drugs. the 2003 actual data was a bit higher than the target for 2003. However, it's not higher than 2006 or 2007. We could leave that those targets alone, or we could increase them based on your consideration of this. And this is number 18. I do not have targets suggested here because I don't know what they ought to be.
I need to understand then, if you have someone who, when you say the targets, we want to increase the number expected to be drug-free, so to speak, is that...
The measure is the percentage of engaged clients who complete the treatment and are not abusing alcohol and other drugs.
I think
after what period of time?
And we don't know that yet.
That should be...
Or is that just completed the program?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Graves.
We had this conversation many months ago. I'm trying to remember. I seem to remember it was 1 year after completion, but we asked some of the department to come up. And there was...
Who's in charge? Bob Nicole?
And there was also a question of whether that number was too low, even though it's... I mean, these are difficult cases, obviously. And I just don't remember the exact figures. But we did have a discussion of what that number should be, or whether it should be 100%. The judge, what you would like, is 100%. But,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Nicol, administrator for the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. I believe on this one, it's simply a matter of whether the clinician believes and documents that the person completed their treatment goals. We did talk about getting better follow-up data, and we're going to be working on that, because whatever happens right at the end of treatment may not reflect well enough what happens a year or so later. So that would be my understanding of this.
Well, let me tell you why this is important. It's important because every year I've been in the legislature, I hear legislators fussing about, we don't know outcomes. We don't know how the success rates. We don't know after what period of time what you have done is successful. And how do we go from one level of helping people to overcome these kind of addictions versus maybe there's a second class or third tier of being able to keep moving them up the ladder until they are totally self-sufficient and drug-free. And so I think having that kind of data helps to serve in terms of how dollars are allocated.
Madam Chair, I agree, and part of the answer lies in better linkage between databases, and we're for example, now able to link into locational data so that we can look at when a person completed a treatment and see a year later if they were employed during treatment, hopefully they would continue to be employed. So there are those kinds of data linkage points that I think we're moving forward with. We also have the integrated database within the department, and that allows us to cross-check some things with child welfare, for example, and other kinds of outcomes.
See, that makes sense to me. Are you satisfied with that?
Mm-hmm.
You're good.
Madam Chair.
I just agreed with you that we really need to have data on how effective these programs are long term.
Madam Chair, we can leave the targets as they are on the performance measurement chart. That's fine. I just raised the question.
I think the question is rightfully raised because I think any agency or any public entity, but I think of anybody that is working with a group of people to have better outcomes than when they came to the place, there should be a goal in mind. And so I think it's a goal for you, Bob, even though you might get to 60 as opposed to 57, but I think there should be a goal in mind. So you and give me a motion.
We don't have a quorum.
Oh, that's right.
Let's continue if we can.
Okay, sure.
Performance measurement 20B is the tobacco use among youth. Again, the goal here is to lower that percentage, and in 2003 the target was 11.8%. They actually reached 10.5, which is lower than the 2006 target. And what we're suggesting here is to consider increasing the targets to 10% for years 2006 and 2007. They are currently at 10.6%, the targets, and 10.2%. So this is a little more aggressive goal, On the other hand, the tobacco prevention and education program funding is being maintained from the current level, but it is a cut to the TURA amount that's been allocated.
Bob, I think another goal is that because we do statewide media events and statewide education programs, is that maybe the media people can, maybe somewhere in our data, I'm wondering if we, see how many people responded as a result of the ads on television or radio or something of that nature. Is there, is, would that be hard to put into your data?
That's a Barry Cass kind of question.
Okay. Barry, join.
So it's public health.
Okay. Bob's mental health. I'm sorry. Okay.
Madam Chair, Barry Caskin, I'd like to hear Mr. Nichols' answer first. I'm sure there is, among the specialists in this area, both our own staff and the media consultant that we've contracted with, plenty of information in response to your question, but I don't know it, and I'll have to get that answer for you.
Yeah, what I was just wondering, though, would it be hard for you to get that information in terms of measurements? Do you have a vehicle already in place that could measure that?
Madam Chair, I just am not familiar with the how that would be measured and what the technology is, but my guess is, because we're talking about an industry that measures everything and
knows
where there's lots of expenditures for product placement and all that kind of thing, that I think we could probably answer that question. I just don't know.
Okay. Bob, you were about to answer.
Well, Madam Chair, I can't speak to the tobacco issue, but we do a lot of public education, as you know, in alcohol and drug.
Right.
And so we do have some data. I don't know how precise it is in terms of referrals, so that when we do a media campaign, I think it may be possible for us to look at our data to see where referrals changed in a period of time after the media campaign. So there are possibilities there, but I don't think there's anything real precise.
Right. Well, let me put it this way. Since you are now the deputy administrator, and you have a little control over all of them, why don't you ask them to come back to you, even if they have to collaborate with A&D in terms of looking at their instruments of measurement for having people respond to, did they get the news through an education focus point, or was it on the media, or where did it come from, so that we can know how successful we are being in those areas.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, we'll go on to performance measurement 21. Again, in this particular instance, the measure is the number of cigarette packs sold per capita. The data is quite better than the target for 2003. The target was 64.5 cigarette packs sold per capita. The actual result was 55.5. So the question is, do we want to revise the targets for 2006 and 07? And I picked the number 54.0.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Why not 55, since it was 55 last time?
It could be. It doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't. So 54 is fine. 55 is fine as far as I'm concerned, Senator.
Makes no difference.
Okay. Number
22? 22. This is the percentage of 19 to 35-month-old children.
Ms. Anderson, could you go and see if one of those guys up front? Thank you.
Performance measurement number 22 is the percentage of 19 to 35-month-old children who are adequately immunized. The targets for 2006 and 2007 are 68.2 and 69.2. And this is a situation where the actual results exceeded the target for 2003. So, I'm recommending that you consider increasing the targets to 70%, which is up a little bit for 2006 and 2007.
And again, I like goals. I think that's good. Ms. Anderson.
Okay, where do we start?
18 through 22.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we adopt Can I do all of them?
Yes, together. One block.
Performance then, measure 8.
Oh, hold on.
But on number 18, I think are going to leave the targets alone at this point.
Leaving it alone.
Yeah.
So we don't need to do anything there.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move that we consider that we increase the targets to 10% for years 2006 and 2007 on project measure number 20B to Senate Bill 5600.
Can you move all of them for me?
As well as project measure 21, increasing the targets to 54 for the year 2006, and adopt project measure number 22, increasing the targets to 70% for years 2006 and 2007 to Senate Bill 5600.
Any objections?
Madam Chair, we have one budget note that has been approved by both Senator Schrader and Representative Scott, and it is here. I'll read it to you.
Please.
The department shall review the potential of securing additional savings in the medical assistance program by the use of brand or legend drugs that may ultimately prove to be of a lesser cost than generics. The department is encouraged to review factors associated with the identification of total drug costs, including all discounts and rebates. The department is encouraged to work with interested parties to identify potential cost savings in this area, as well as potential administrative problems associated with the use and reimbursement of such drugs.
Question?
Madam Chair, I assume that budget note is getting to the situation where when a drug first goes from a brand name to a
generic,
and it might actually be cheaper for a significant period of time, 6 months or a year, to actually buy the brand name.
That is my assumption.
And I assume that's what we're talking about here?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Bates.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
sir.
Do we need a motion on this?
Yes, please.
Yes.
I move that we accept the budget note concerning saving money in the medical assistance program by the use of brand or legend drugs that may ultimately prove to be at a lesser cost than generics.
Objections?
All right. With respect to subcommittee action on this, again, we're going to take another crack at this tomorrow with the seniors and people with disabilities, and then have a wrap-up hopefully tomorrow, but that's up to you and Senator Schrader, of course. But our recommendation is that the subcommittee approve a preliminary budget of $1,129,536,860 general fund, $9,312,000 lottery funds, $815,024,949 other funds, $2,707,177,761 federal funds, 2,230 positions, 2,163.80 FTE for health services. Again, this is not a final budget necessarily, but it represents what we went over today.
Madam Chair?
Senator Monison.
I move that the subcommittee recommend the approval of the preliminary budget of what Mr. Britton just said.
Objections?
Just a moment of discussion, if I would.
Sure.
The process of this now goes to the special committee on budget and Senate, correct?
No. Madam Chair and Senator Bates, we have to go over the senior portion of it tomorrow.
Because they're locked.
They're all part of Senate Bill 5600. Right. So we're not. This isn't final action on the bill or anything like that. What we would like to do is to go over the senior spreadsheet like we did with the health services. And at that point, you will have heard all of the four clusters, the major four clusters, and then have a wrap-up with you immediately following the work on the senior and people with disabilities tomorrow.
Madam Chair, I would assume that since these budgets are interlocked, that if in the next 24 to 48 hours, as we look at these even more closely, that if there's a problem, you're in a position to work them.
Senator, there certainly is the opportunity to do that. But there will not be the opportunity to bring them back to committee. It is my intent it was my intent to try to get these budgets out as we heard them. And if there were any corrections, they would come as a result of the larger negotiations. But the base point will have been seen and acted upon by us.
On that basis, I have no objection to give you a courtesy yes vote.
Thank you. And that's understandable.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
Final subcommittee action for today does not require a motion. You could if you wanted to, but we're not working Senate Bill 5504, which is the capital construction bill, and the Certificates of Participation Authorization Bill, which is Senate Bill 5503. But you need to be aware of the fact that within Senate Bill 5504, it's the intention of the co-chair to add a dollar of other funds expenditure limitation to the capital construction bill for the Oregon State Hospital project. As I said earlier, there's $350,000 general fund already in the governor's budget for the phase two study. But this would allow for the department to come in before the e-board to get additional expenditure limitation to begin further work or to continue work on the Oregon State Hospital project. The other bill, Senate Bill 5503, would authorize $2 million in that bill for certificates of participation. It's commonly known as the bonding bill. And this would also set the stage for an emergency board appearance to consider approving issuance of COPs to begin the Oregon State Hospital project during the 05-07 biennium.
So these two bills are waiting to be acted upon?
Yes, they will be worked on by the Senate and the House at some point in time.
So what would happen if we acted upon this today?
It's perfectly fine to act on it. I think what we're trying to do is to help you be aware of that, because these two bills may not be worked in this particular subcommittee.
Right.
But if this is something that you think is a good idea, I think it would be worthy to put that on the record.
See, I feel very comfortable with this, colleagues. And it's something that we have gone over before and that we've been having some concerns about. And I was just wondering, I would want to take it to a motion if you felt uncomfortable or you needed more information, but I would like to carry it through a vote so the committee can know that we corroborate whatever the findings are if it's in the pasta.
Madam Chair, I feel very strongly that we need to get the capital construction bill moving, whether we end up dealing with it. We have got to leave this session with these two bills, as far as I'm concerned, because we've already seen the master plan. Phase two is on the way, and so I move that this committee recommend the Senate Bill 5504 with $1 being in it, knowing that the emergency board will be adding more money in the future as this process proceeds.
And Senate Bill 5503.
Oh, you want to do them together?
Yeah.
And I also move that we adopt or move Senate Bill 5503 to the main committee. Which committee are we moving it to?
No, Madam Chair and Senator Mona Sanderson, we're not moving either of these bills. We're just voicing approval if that's
okay.
What you want to do.
And I also want to give approval to Senate Bill 5503, which would set the stage for the emergency board to consider approving issuance of a certificate of participation to begin the Oregon State Hospital project.
And Madam Chair, I want to add to that that if anyone's listening in the President's office, they sent us those two bills to this committee.
To this committee.
Thank you. Quickly, so we can work on those.
I think
a better committee handle those two bills.
Okay.
We're ready for them. We know the issue. Send them to us.
Are there objections?
Oh, Jack Dempsey, are you out there?
We have about 12 minutes before we go to the floor.
Can we do 1080?
But if we could do 1088, that's fine. Okay, go for it.
All right.
Thank you.
Did you want to close the work session?
Close the work session on Senate Bill 5600 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1088. Thank
all right.
Do it real fast.
Madam Chair, we had a public hearing on Senate Bill 88. want to say a week ago, but I've lost track at this particular point in time. But Senate Bill 1088 does three things. First of all, it incorporates Senate Bill 88 exactly as it you heard last week, and it requires, it adds a reporting requirement for the department to come in and to report on the rule changes that are allowed in Section 1 of Senate Bill 1088, and Section 1 is Senate Bill 88. The reporting requirement is in Section 5 of Senate Bill 1088, which is in front of you, and it requires the department to report regularly to the appropriate legislative interim committees with oversight of health care or human services programs on, one, the adoption of rules under Section 1, and two, the implementation of the Medicare Part D benefit for persons who are duly eligible. So that's Senate Bill 1088 with respect to 88. Now, it does one other thing, however, and that is it incorporates some amendments that had been made to House Bill 3108, the -7 amendment, which allows the department to make collections on persons' estates. And these, this is on in sections 2, 3, and 4. All adopt that. It allows them to make collections on the estates for whom clawback payments were made. Today, the department is permitted to make collections on estates of persons who received Medicaid, Oregon Health Plan, or long-term care benefits. This would allow the department to make estate collections for clawback on behalf of persons who received clawback payments on their behalf for the Medicare benefit.
I think this is a great bill. Comments?
Go ahead. Madam Chair, as a first comment, we need this bill. I think the fiscal audit is $100 million against us if we don't do this. Because the Medicare changes are going to be occurring first this year, first next year, we have to do this or some form of it. And the additional work done on this in and above past 88 is excellent work. So I would move Senate Bill 1088 to the Special Senate Committee on Budget. With the due pass recommendation.
Objections? Good work, guys.
Good work. That was quick.
Did we move 5,600 to the...
No.
But we're not going to...
Madam Chair and Senator Mona Sanderson, 5,600 we'll work on again tomorrow with respect to the seniors.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Before we all leave...
Before 3 o'clock, folks.
Yes, we will.
Yes. Are you reminding you?
If you want to adjourn.
Tomorrow morning, I would like to, if at all possible, to get us together without forming a forum or something and have a talk with LFO about this budget. It's all possible to people's schedules.
No, we have
no idea.
What's your schedule?
I don't know.
Okay, hold on just for a minute. Without objections, I'd like to adjourn the committee.
Thank you.